Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me. How are you guys doing tonight?
Not too bad.
Doing fantastic.
Good. It is now officially full off-season mode, which is a little depressing. I didn't really know what to do Sunday afternoon this weekend, but let's jump right into news here. We're going to go over some news topics for the first bit here, maybe some debate about Hinchcliffe's article on racer.com today, and we'll end with some pitfalls. But before we get there, our first Patreon shout-out goes to David Lighting, who would like Matt to understand that Patrick Mahomes has more touchdown passes in two career starts than Mitchell Trubisky has his entire career. So we'll just leave it at that, and I'll let Matt go bring up the first racing topic of the day.
I'm not going to let that one slide. it's not my fault that the Packers aren't first in the division right now, and I can't help it that Aaron Rodgers is dating Danica Patrick. That's not my problem. So thanks, David. I appreciate the shout out. We do appreciate the Patreon supporters, and we really appreciate the ones that bash the Bears. So keep them coming.
Yes, please.
I think we'll start off with maybe not the biggest news of the week, but one that could carry a lot of momentum. And that was the announcement that Harding Racing is going to be rebranded as Harding Steinbrenner Racing. And Pato O'Ward and Colton Herta, like Sonoma, will be their drivers for this season in 2019. They did not announce yet as far as who they're going to go with. Everybody kind of assumed it would be Chevy, but no official announcement was made in the press conference. And then there is going to be a technical alliance with Andretti Autosport. So kind of rapid reaction here. Jess, what are your thoughts about the whole deal there?
I think it's really good for the young guys. Get them in there, get them some experience, and obviously having some technical stuff coming from Andretti is going to be huge for them. I mean, you can't really be upset about getting information from that team right now. So I think it's going to be really, really good for those guys as far as the series. Heck yeah, bring more cars. Let's keep it rolling.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's awesome. Well, obviously, we talked to Pato at Gateway, and he's a great guy to talk to, and had a hell of a showing in Sonoma in his first and only IndyCar race. I think it's extra cool, and Matt, you might have been getting to this next, and I might be stealing the thunder here, that not only is George Steinbrenner fourth one of the owners, but he's getting some co-ownership from Hank Steinbrenner, who's the co-owner of the Yankees, who came out the other day on racer.com and said, listen, we're in this for the long haul and we love the direction of IndyCar, which was to me the best thing I saw out of this Harding Steinbrenner merger.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it wasn't ever a thought in my mind that it would be someone other than George Steinbrenner the fourth that would be kind of leading this venture. So for Hank Steinbrenner to come out and say, hey, we're in this together and we're in this for the long haul. This isn't going to be a short-term thing. To me, that was fantastic. Loved it. Loved every bit of that. It caught me off guard. I texted Mike and I was like, did you see that? And we kind of got geeked about it. So that was pretty cool. The other part that kind of interests me is that if indeed they do go with Chevrolet, I do think that since there is a technical alliance there with Andretti Autosport, that definitely opens the door for McLaren to go Chevrolet. And that kind of segues into our next topic. But if Harding can do Chevrolet and have a technical alliance, is it safe to say, Mike, that McLaren by that measure then could do Chevrolet and have a technical alliance with Andretti as well?
I feel like every time we talk about McLaren, we're changing our thoughts about it. In some way, shape, or form, because every day there's something different in a different tone that comes out about McLaren. But yeah, I mean, I don't see why it's not possible. I know the Andretti Alliance, for those wondering, how can Honda and Chevy coexist like that, has nothing to do with the engine. The technical alliance is chassis-based, and they will loan out their dampers and subcontract out some crew. Now, I'm sure some information could leak out, but for the most part, I think if this arrangement holds for them, I think it could easily hold for McLaren as well.
I mean, I think he covered it. I have to agree. If one team can do it, why can't another? So yeah, I could see him doing it. Obviously, I think there would need to be some kind of agreement between Harding and McLaren also, just because if they're both working with Andretti, they need to have an understanding amongst themselves also where everybody kind of fits into this very large puzzle it would become. But I think it's doable.
And so on top of that, because Zach Brown, well, there's been so many reports, you know, the Honda officials say, no, we're not going with them. And then the next day, Autosport coming out and said, sources close to the situation says that Honda's still in the frame. And then the next person says Chevrolet is it for sure. And then Zach Brown literally came out this week and said, yeah, I might have been last week saying that, yeah, Honda, we're still considering them. So just real quick, just one word prediction from you guys. If McLaren happens, is it going to be with Honda or Chevrolet? Go ahead, Mike.
Honda.
Jess?
Chevy.
I'm going with Chevy. So I guess we can maybe make that poll, our poll of the week, is if McLaren does come to IndyCar, is it going to be Honda or McLaren? Not McLaren. Honda or Chevrolet. I got McLaren on the brain. I'm sorry. And then one more interesting kind of footnote to add on to the McLaren news that has been coming out the last couple weeks is that F2 driver Nicholas Latifi, whose dad is very involved with McLaren. In fact, he invested 225 million euros into McLaren this offseason, which was equals $265 million. His son, who races in F2, is in the frame for a seat with McLaren in IndyCar as well, along with Alonso and maybe, you know, a guy like Stoffel Van Dorn. That really kind of, my buddy Stephen King on Twitter kind of called that a couple months ago, to his credit. Didn't really see a whole lot to the rumors there. But it's interesting to note that we've all been hearing Alonso, Alonso, Alonso. And, you know, we had the Dixon rumors too back in the day as far as adding Dixon as well. But it really seems like they're intent on not just running Alonso if they do come. Potentially maybe because Alonso might not be doing the full schedule. And somehow then the source for this was someone across the pond, but the source also said that they may be bringing McDonald's as a sponsorship, which I don't know how we got to that conclusion. But so if Alonso happens in a part-time deal, I don't know if you guys have a preference or if you guys even know who Nicholas Latifi is or if you prefer Stoffel Van Dorn. I mean, if this hypothetical second McLaren IndyCar seat, we're not talking about their two-car Indy Lights effort. That's never going to happen. We're talking about the... Oh. I'm sorry. I keep bringing... I need to find a new joke. If this does happen, Jess, do you see them adding two cars as well with maybe this Nicholas Latifi character, who I think is from Canada?
I don't know anything about him. I'm going to be perfectly honest. But man, that's a lot of money that his dad invested. That's a lot of money. So yeah, obviously he's got the funding behind him. And that is probably going to be a huge selling point for them if this magical second McLaren car comes into play. I don't know, man. At this point, I'm just wanting to see one car come together for a certain driver that we all would really like to see come over. So that's where I'm leaving it. Let's just focus on the one car. But obviously, if funding needs to happen, then that guy clearly has it.
Well, I think it needs to be Nicholas Latifi just so we can add to Jess's theme of who?
Who?
That needs to happen just for that reason. Anything to add there,
but
Mike?
I don't know. That was this season. Is next season going to be the season of who too? Because I don't know.
Well, if there really is going to be 28 cars at some races, you got to think that I don't know. I mean, Ho Pin Tung could come back. I don't know. You just never know.
I love Hogan.
Max.
He's got a great name. I know very little about Nicholas Latifi other than his racing summary that I just pulled up on my computer here. Doesn't really have Peter. a fantastic track record. Listen, this isn't Stump the Host. I'm allowed to cheat. But his last 2 years in F2 or GP2, as it was once called, he does have one win. This year, he's ninth in the standings. Last year, he was fifth in the standings. So, and he's only 23, so maybe he's improving. But it's tough for me to guess because I don't think I've ever actually watched a GP2 race, at least since Connor Daly or somebody was over there racing. But can you imagine having $226 million and or $260 US million invested in McLaren if McLaren said, listen, we need $15 million to get IndyCar going here? That's like a drop in the bucket for this guy. So if that means McLaren can come over and race full time in IndyCar for two cars and then get Alonso, even if it's Alonso for a handful of races, not a full season, I think I am all for Nicholas Latifi.
Yeah, and just doing quick mental math, because I'm trying to figure out how much it would cost to do a full season in IndyCar properly. And I think the number comes down to about $10 to $12 million per season if you want to run it like a Team Penske, because I believe last year, or maybe 2 years ago, Roger Penske said to run a full-time IndyCar effort with three or four cars costs the same as doing just one car in NASCAR. And I think a NASCAR season costs somewhere between, if you're doing it right, $25 to $30 million a season, somewhere thereabouts. So if you do the math, that's about, if you're doing a three-car team, maybe $10 million, $12 million on the high end. So if you're saying $16 million to do two cars, that means you're above average. I mean, that's not, I don't think you're slouching by any means. You're nowhere near like Dale Coyne, who's probably $3 to $4 million a year. Who knows? I think we will be getting an announcement hopefully within the next 3 or 4 weeks. I think they had their eyes set on October, but we can't go in an episode with news without talking about McLaren. So we'll move it on from there. The next one, seems to be, I don't know, I was kind of flummoxed because Max Chilton, this is all about Carlin, this next segment. Max Chilton, it seems like, despite his dad no longer being in charge of Gallagher, since he's still part owner of Carlin, Carlin, it looks like, is going to keep Max Chilton in the fold next year full time. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that. I think someone nominated him for most disappointing driver last year. I think it might have been Jeff's.
I think you're right.
Yep.
And I can't remember. I think Chilton or Graham is winning right now on that poll. Shameless plug, go check our Twitter account and vote on those polls. I think they may be closing Saturday. You still do have time to vote if you're listening to this on Friday today. So it sounds like Chilton might be back full time, while Charlie Kimball, who we always assume just has the sponsorship money, is slated maybe not to have a full budget together. Are either of you going to be disappointed if we don't see Charlie Kimball full time next year?
I'm going to start out by saying I'm surprised. I definitely thought it was going to be the other way around. I'm pretty sure I said that on multiple episodes, maybe a month or so ago, when the whole news about Chilton's dad getting fired or moving on from head of the company. But I'm sure the dude still has a boatload of money, so I'm sure that's not an issue. But I am surprised that Kimball is having some trouble. But I guess, I mean, if I were Novo Nordisk, I'd say, listen, it's been many years since you've been on a podium, at least a couple of years since you've been on a podium. Many years. That was mean.
No, it's not. Come on.
That was mean of me. I'm sorry, Charlie. But I'm surprised, but at the same time, I'm not surprised.
I'm still trying to pick my jaw up off the floor that Max Chilton actually has the funding. But I wonder, it makes me almost wonder if he didn't pay for a couple seasons ahead. If his father was kind of ousted, maybe he had already paid for a couple seasons, or you know, had the funding already together. But yeah, Charlie not having the funding is kind of extremely shocking. But am I going to be sad to not see him full time? Or how did you phrase that? Am I going to be disappointed? No, I'm not going to be. It's probably a whole lot of cars that are not going to be torn up. So I'm not sad, but yeah, that's kind of shocking about Max having the money together. I mean, it's, you know, I did nominate him for most disappointing, so maybe he'll come back and have a good season.
That's high hopes you got there. Jess, can we agree that sometimes Mike's maybe a little too nice on this podcast?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Come on, Mike. Give it to Charlie. After 11 years of sponsoring him, they've gotten one win and I don't know what, 5 or 6 or 7 podiums.
Yeah, I know.
Pole award.
I'm saying it without saying it.
Okay. So after 11 years of sponsoring. Yeah, just say it. After 11 years of sponsoring a very average driver, for them to kind of maybe rethink, you know what? Maybe this isn't a good idea. Or you could always shift your funds to maybe, I don't know, a Connor Daly who never actually goes around to parades the fact that he has diabetes, but I think would be an excellent ambassador for him. And not that Charlie's a fantastic dude. I think we all three of us will agree that Charlie's one of the nicest guys ever, but just on the track, just rubs me the wrong way. So I think we'll just leave it at that. But the other possible news with Carlin is that Trevor Carlin himself has come out and publicly said to various sources that they are intent on running a third car next year. And many of us thought it was full time, but he did just come out and kind of clarify. He said, you know, it's got to make sense financially and just logistically. And, you know, they just want to see if they can put together a third car. And it might be part-time split between two drivers. It might be a full-time entry split between two drivers. And the names that popped up recently have been Ed Jones, who is likely on his way out of Ganassi, not confirmed yet. And then Zachary Clayman DeMello, who was in a handful of races with Coyne this year and was also in the frame for the Harding seat towards the end of the season. If you guys had to pick between Jones and Clayman DeMello or insert third option, who would you like to see in Carlin if they do this third car?
I'll let Jess go first.
Yay. I was hoping you would. Well, if I had to pick between those two, I think it's like a fairly easy pick. Jones, I wouldn't even think about Clayman DeMello really. But as far as if it's a third person outside or whatever, they had also talked about putting Billy Monger in a car and working him up through the series. And I would love to see him get a chance because I've watched the kid race a few times and he's amazing. So I think that would be a good outside who person to bring over.
He's kind of really well known nowadays. And
now he is. He got a lot of publicity, unfortunately, for his accident, and he's come back, and man, is he killing it.
Right. So, and I guess maybe before I toss it to Mike, we'll just clarify it. So someone within, no, Billy Monger is definitely within reason, and that's not what I'm trying to say, but like a Connor Daly is not going to get that third Carlin seat unless some mystery sponsor pops up out of nowhere. So I feel like the driver would have to have money. So maybe like a pay driver. If it wasn't Clayman DeMello or Jones, who would you guys pick? And some Billy Monger, I would definitely love to see Billy Monger get a chance at some point. I don't know if they'll throw him to the, you know, wolves right away and put him in an Indy car, but Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd say if he started in Pro Mazda, I would say start him in you know, USF or Pro Mazda, no problem. I know the Pro or the USF car is the same car as the or same chassis as the F3 car for the most part, I think. So in terms of Carlin's potential third car, yeah, definitely a ride buyer. If we're going full season, what about somebody like Esteban Ocon? If we're going maybe some sort of ride share, I know Ed Jones is rumored to have a half season type budget. You know, if Ed can get half a season in, I think he can kind of regain his showing for, you know, any new teams that might pop up or, you know, maybe an older driver retires in the coming years and then Ed can slide right back in there.
Perfect. I'll vouch for him. I'll say Zach Lemon DeMello was pretty fun to watch this last season. Very aggressive, very. He's got that swagger to him outside of the track. You know, I'm going to do what I want, and I don't care if you don't like it kind of attitude, which I don't think we get enough of. Didn't have the best of showing at a couple races, but at a couple others like Texas, I thought he was phenomenal at Texas. So I think there's a lot of potential with Clayman DeMello. I definitely don't want to see him go away. I'd love to see him at least part-time next year. But since we're on the topic of Ed Jones, we'll segue into our first fan question here of the night from a Patreon member of ours and good friend, Michael Goodyear, who's at mgoodyear007 on Twitter. Love that Twitter handle. He wants to know, as far as Ed Jones goes, he wants to know if we think Ed Jones underperformed or were the expectations around his season just too high that he just could not live up to in his first full season with Ganassi, and thus leading to what we expect to be his demise from Ganassi here in a couple weeks. We'll start off with Mike on this one.
If you look at the numbers, they weren't actually as bad as it kind of feels like Ed Jones' season is just thinking about it. And I don't have it. Give me 1 second here and I'll pull it up while I keep talking. And he had a disappointing, really start and average finishing position of 13.1 and 13.2. But he did have quite a few races. You know, he had the podium early in the year at Long Beach, a podium in Detroit, another sixth place in Detroit, two top tens right after that, and then, you know, eighth place at Gateway, and then a top 10 at Sonoma. So he had plenty of good runs, but he also had a couple crashes, you know, crashed at the 500. I believe he crashed at Phoenix too, and he was running third or fourth at that point. So inconsistent, sure, but did he have a disappointing year? It's not as disappointing as people are making it out to be.
Okay. I have to kind of disagree slightly. I think that the expectations that Ganassi held for him were way too high. He's coming into a team where he's not used to the people that surround him. You know, he's got to get used to basically everything that they do there, their whole program. And as we all know, Chip likes winners. So I can imagine that if he didn't produce the win, he had some explaining to do. Because he wasn't producing wins. So I feel like the expectations from the team were probably a little higher than they should have been, being that it was his first year with the team. I definitely feel that they should give him another season to kind of, you know, I mean, he's had a season to work out the kinks and get used to how everything works with the team. That's just, I just think they, you know, it's the whole Chip likes winners thing. And I feel like he just underperformed for Chip's expectations.
And Chip can be very platitudinous sometimes. I mean, Jones, his rating was a shameless plug for my driver rating. And if you have any questions about my driver rating system, just give me a message on Twitter. But the shameless plug is Ed Jones are in a 6.0 this season, or I guess technically now it's our last season here, 2018. His best race was at Long Beach, where he got a podium. And then obviously his worst race is when he crashed at Indy, which again, with the double points finishing, I think he finished like 30th or something. That's obviously going to ruin your season. You're going to be hard pressed to recover championship wise from that. Just for reference, Kanaan, who was absolutely terrible in 2017, his rating was a 5.6, which isn't entirely hard to beat, but Jones did beat it. So that entry did get better for 2018. So I do think you're both right. I don't think either of you are wrong. I just slightly lean towards Jess that it just, I think the expectations are too high, and it's never easy to go against a guy like Scott Dixon. Of course, you're going to get shown up when you go against Scott Dixon. So yeah, but we wish, I think, and kind of going back to Carlin too, I hope Jones returns next year with Carlin or someone else so that he can kind of go back and prove, you know, I do have talent. I am here for a reason. And I'm not just the guy who was fired by Ganassi. So hopefully he can turn it around for next season. So we will pass it to Mike here.
Yes. Just our second Patreon shout out of the episode. Thank you, Colin Taylor, who said that the Philadelphia Flyers' new mascot looks like a Yeti from Mars, which is one of, I mean, I can't even defend the terribleness that is the new Philadelphia Flyers mascot named Gritty.
The only way it can get uglier is if it had a cheese head on.
Yeah. I'm just gonna leave that one at that. It's embarrassing as a Flyers fan. I know there's a handful of people that do like it, but Matt, I'll turn it back over to you for the next topic.
Since we're on the topic of cheeseheads, did you guys know that despite her claiming to be from Roscoe, Illinois, that Danica Patrick was actually born in Beloit, Wisconsin?
Wow.
I didn't know that. Did you guys know that?
No, Jess, did you?
Did not.
Jess, did you know that? Oh, okay. Anyways,
I did not. Nope.
Moving on. We're actually going to put Mike back on the spot here with our Stump the Host question.
Oh,
no, it's not that bad. I'm not going to ask you.
I'm about to put you guys on the spot.
No, I'm not going to ask your opinion on AJ Foyt and if he's irrational or anything like that.
I actually don't want to comment on that out of fear that he might figure out who we are one day. All right. So, you know, looking back on 2018, Will Power had an astounding average start position of 2.8, which included four pole positions. In the past 10 seasons, going back to the year 2008, there are four other drivers that had at least a 3.9 starting position or better. Will Power is one of them, so I'll give you guys one free answer there in 2010, yes. Can you name the other three drivers? And I'll give you a break and give you the years. I'm not going to give you the years just yet.
Okay.
Because it'll give one away, so I'm not going to give you guys some help just yet.
Okay, so you said there's four others, and one of them was Will Power.
Yep. In 2010.
So we're down to three. And wait, what year did you say it started? I'm so sorry.
It's 2008.
Okay.
I'm kind of happy we're at that time. We're at the post-merge. We're now there's a ton of statistical analysis we can do since 2008. Because to be honest, it's hard to do statistical analysis back when there was IRL and Champ Car.
Yes.
Because it's apples and oranges. But 10 years out, yeah, that's we can do a lot of statistical analysis. Anyways. I digress.
Yay, merger.
Yay. Tony George did something right. God.
One is fairly recent. The other two are towards the beginning of that timeline.
Okay, so I feel like, and Jess, I'm going to try not to ramble because I know you hate that. but I feel like
you don't do it nearly as bad, so you're fine.
Here, you want me to start doing it, Mike? I'll do it the mic way. Was it Milka 2010? No.
At least my answers aren't that bad.
Marty Roth 2008? No. I'm going to honestly guess. I think Pagano 16's got to be close.
Yep, 3.9.
Hey.
2010 was Will Power at at least dating back to 2008, record 2.2 average start. He had 8 pole positions in 17 races.
I think the record from what I remember, if you want to look it up, was Greg Ray in 1999 or one of those years. Because they only ran 10 races, and I think he had pole for 6 or 7 of them. And that was in the IRL. But anyways, we'll look that up later maybe. I just feel like Dario's got to be one of them, but it's so hard to pinpoint a year because
he was close. 2009, Dario was a 4.2. Scott Dixon was a 4.3, but they do not qualify for this answer.
I was going to say, I feel like Dario's would have been 2007. So that would have been before.
Dario in 2007 was a 3.3, and Kanaan was a 3.6, and Helio was a 3.5.
Oh, God, Elio. You shouldn't have said that. Elio.
No.
He's not on there?
No.
Save you
that
the
guy knows how to qualify and pull and sink like no other. Don't even start with me. Of course he's going to qualify well and not finish well because that's his forte.
In 2008, Helio had an average start of 6.8 and an average finish of 4.0. But we'll save that debate for another episode.
God, would you stop?
Yeah.
The statistics are overwhelming in my favor there.
I know.
All right, I think we might need some hints here.
Okay, let's see. 2008. I often say he's from a different country.
Dixon.
Yes, 3.2.
I thought you just... Oh, never mind.
No, you don't say he's from a different country. You say he's from this country.
Right. I wanted to make the hint a little bit more vague.
Just how about the year and the next? Well, I don't know, because I feel like if you just give us the year, it's probably just the champion. Is that a fair assumption?
No. 2009, this guy finished third overall in the standings. He had 4 pole positions, 11 podiums, and 3 wins. And I will tell you the team he raced for in 1 second. He raced
Briscoe.
Yep. He started an average of 3.5. And I have a bonus one that we are not going to answer in the episode here. In how many career laps did AJ Foyt the IV lead in his 84 career races? We'll make that one, I don't know, we'll do a giveaway for a Jay Fry t-shirt.
Just message us at Pit Lane Parlay, that's P-A-R-L-E-Y, or tweet, or however you want to get that out. But if you can, no honor system, no cheating. Yeah. But if you
guarantee I know who's going to win this one.
Faux willpower.
My best girl, Chelsea, she loved him, so she'll know.
I think Jake Neely sounds like someone who would know that.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
That's a good... Jake, that wasn't me insulting you. I swear, that's like a compliment.
And just a quick shout out to Toronto Motorsports for sponsoring the episode again. We have a boatload of entries for the Hinchcliffe Autograph Diecast giveaway. And by the time you're probably listening to this, the drawing will have come to a close, but it does go to Friday at noon Eastern time. If you happen to be listening to this Friday morning, we've tweeted out the link a couple times, and I'm sure we'll do it a couple more times before the week ends here. So I'll turn it back over to you, Matt, for the next topic.
Well, I do want to give a quick shout out to Vikings fans. If you're listening to this Friday, I'm sorry you guys lost to the Los Angeles Rams. All right, moving on. We do want to bring up real quick an update on our buddy Robert Wickens. He and his fiance have been, who does his social media for him, have been very active on social media lately. Actually, just an hour or two before we recorded this, he gave a happy birthday shout out to Alexander Rossi. The one that definitely tugged at our hearts this week was a video of him riding a bike as part of his physical rehabilitation. And he just looked super elated. He just turned to the camera and said that he was riding a bike and just looked super happy. I think it might have been Jess who tweeted, like, you know, I'm not crying, you're crying, or something like that. Because it was just a very emotional video, and it's just fantastic to see. So obviously everybody, including us three, are still hoping that the recovery is going well for him. It's glad to see more social media posts from him and just kind of giving updates every now and then, which is super it's super fun for us to just see how his progress is going, and just seeing him smile is something that we really enjoy. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, I did not tweet that, but that's exactly how I felt. I was so excited when I saw that video. In fact, my mom, who is Twitter free, got a almost instant text message from me, and I'm like, oh my God, you got to look at this. This is amazing. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. It's great to see and hope we get plenty of more updates like that through the off season. They're definitely, uplifting to watch.
Yeah. Well said. And, kind of to touch on just one more thing about Robert Wickens was what we mentioned in the award show last week is that per our buddy Jim Aiello, they are planning on holding that 6th seat for Robert Wickens, even if he's not back in time for the season. So they will still be running 2 cars, but what that second car would be the number 7 entry, which they do have the rights to that number. So that'll be interesting to see if Wickens isn't ready, who would be eligible for that seat, who they just select. And we're going to kind of segue into kind of just miscellaneous silly season stuff that's happened over the last 3 weeks here. Kind of touching on that. So we saw this week a story about 3 soon to be ex F1 drivers. So Pascal Wehrlein has been out of F1 for a year now, but Stoffel Vandoorne and Esteban Ocon, who are currently still in Formula One, look like they're on their way out. Van Dorn has been confirmed out, and then Ocon is expected to be released and then not signed by anybody. And so they are in the frame either part-time with Schmidt or full-time with a second coin car, so the one that's been occupied by Clayman DeMello and Fittipaldi. I don't know if you guys have an opinion on those three. Mike, do you have any thoughts to share?
I can't imagine it being Pascal Wehrlein, because I'm pretty sure he got fired from DTM this year too. So I'm not pulling up his stats, so I'm not cheating, Jess. But I didn't hear him mentioned once this year until, you know, that report came out the other day. So I think it's safe to say it's probably not going to be him. But then again, I'm pretty sure we've been wrong about that multiple times in the past year. I think it would be cool if Esteban Ocon came over. I think he's kind of gotten the short end of the stick in F1 as, you know, Mercedes reserve driver, and just has never really been in a remotely competitive car. So I wouldn't mind seeing him. I think I mentioned that a couple minutes ago. And Stoffel Vandoorne, you know, I saw today, I think I shared with you and we put it on Twitter, is, you know, he's close to signing some sort of agreement or interested in Formula E, which is, I'm just going to leave it at that.
Sorry, Fran.
Yeah. I need a soundboard, which we'll have next week.
Seriously?
Yeah. We'll have, you know, fun sounds to play, like clapping sounds or we can put some Danica facts right in there.
Exactly.
Oh, great.
See, this Mike does this to us. Mike breaks news to us on the podcast as we're going. Yeah. Which is kind of,
I made that decision like as I hit the record button tonight.
Yeah, Jess, do you got any more thoughts on the, not the soundboard, on the three drivers?
I was going to say on the soundboard, that means he's been online shopping while we've been recording.
At least he's not cheating.
And I'm going to be honest, I did not cheat. So I really don't have a huge opinion. I have heard that Stoffel was going to go to Formula E. So, you know, that's kind of, it's not a done deal, but it sounds like it's getting closer to being a done deal. But yeah, I mean, again, God, it really has been the year of who. So I just never, like, I'd never want to say never anymore, because this year has been interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, and I like the theme of who, and I think that would apply to Pascal Wehrlein, but Stoffel Vandoorne and Esteban Ocon bring some pretty big reputations with them, so that would be something that would definitely enhance the field, especially on road courses. We'll see how quickly they get up to ovals if they do come over here. Some quick silly season stuff to touch on. As far as official confirmations go, Sebastian Bourdais, who we kind of thought was going to be back with Coyne, and then all of a sudden Coyne was not going to pick up his driver option, but then he ended up doing it anyways. So Sebastian Bourdais will be back with Dale Coyne and Vassar Sullivan as a associate owner sponsor kind of deal with the 18 car. Takuma Sato will be back with Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing in the number 30 car. That's the second entry there. Spencer Pigot, thankfully, will be back with Ed Carpenter Racing for a full season again. His second full season, really finished the season strong, and is the, I call it when it was his birthday, I said he is the greatest Mazda Road to Indy driver of all time, since he won in every ladder. And then Ed Carpenter reluctantly did not fire Ed Carpenter, so Ed Carpenter will be back for the ovals next year, which is like the least surprising news of all time.
In Ed's defense, he did have a much better oval year this year than he's had in many years. And speaking of Ed Carpenter, you know, Pigot really seemed to come on strong after Jess picked him that one weekend. So maybe Spencer owes Jess some credit.
Yeah, and I'll debate you on that one. I think other than Indy, he didn't knock my socks off again. He was okay at... He had a pretty good Phoenix, if I remember, but he wrecked Wickens at Texas. He was okay at Pocono. I think he was okay at Iowa. Obviously, Pigot showed him up at Iowa. And at Gateway, I think he had a solid effort. You know, nothing too bad there, but it's never what you expect from an oval specialist. I guess we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, listen, I'm still not going to say he's an oval connoisseur. But seventh at Phoenix, a second at Indy, a 10th at Iowa and Pocono, and then a 12th at Gateway is, you know, and a much improved showing over what he's shown the last few years. But, you know, we'll save that debate for another day.
You say oval connoisseur. I say oval dodecahedron.
So. Yeah, that I don't even know what that means. I'm not even going to lie and pretend.
I blame the people on Twitter for giving me these. If anybody doesn't know, if I say some random word in the middle of a broadcast, it's because I ask people on Twitter to send me a random word to say in the broadcast, and dodecahedron was one of those words. And how do you work that in naturally? I got one more tonight. It's going to be pretty obvious what word that is. So if you see it, please don't like adjust your radio. It's something I am actually saying. Moving on, Carlos Munoz. Carlos Munoz, who was in the final two races with Schmidt, would love to go back to Schmidt, but he does say that he does not have a budget to compete full time, so it's probably going to be another one-off at Indy. Thankfully, because he is so much fun to watch at Indy, he was with Andretti Autosport this last year, and then his first several seasons he was with Andretti Autosport. Sage Karam, shamelessly plugging the fact that we had him on our broadcast 2 weeks ago. He did say in the interview with us that he is working with Dryden Reinbold to run a part-time schedule next season. He said, if I remember correctly, I asked him if what are the chances they do full-time. He said they're pretty low, which wasn't too great to hear, but then they did say the chances of them running part-time are pretty high, which is definitely good news. So we wish him the best. Dryden Reinbold did tease
us. How disappointing was that today?
Yeah, they did tease us a little bit today.
I guess if you're listening a couple days ago.
Yeah, it was just a rallycross. So that's one where you just keep scrolling on your timeline and go next. COTA, which was announced to be on schedule next year, which Mike did predict correctly. So good job, Mike. Good job, Mike. They will also be hosting the spring training that we normally see at Phoenix. And before that, I think it was Barber. And before that, I think it was Tony George's backyard.
Correct. So
they will host spring training probably in February is when it usually is. And then they will actually, which was something we debated on here several times, they will actually be using the same layout as the F1 race does, and I think we debated that a couple times, so we probably won't beat a dead horse. We'll turn it over to Jess on this one. I'll prelude it by saying that AJ Allmendinger was dropped by his team in NASCAR for next season, and Casey Kane was seen around the Ed Carpenter Racing tent at Sonoma. And Casey Kane is also without a ride for next season. He does want to try a whole bunch of stuff next year, so it's not like he's trying to commit to one thing only. So, Jess, if you had to pick Casey Kane or AJ Allmendinger at the Indy 500, who would you pick?
Strictly going off health concerns, I would pick AJ Allmendinger. The whole reason Casey Kane's not racing right now is because he's having health issues that are not allowing him to race. Something to do with basically his body is overheating and he can't stay hydrated. Putting him in a car in extreme, it's not always extremely hot, but the last few years has been extremely hot for 500 miles. Just sounds like an absolutely horrible idea.
All right. So all things equal, who would you pick?
Casey Kane.
Mike, how about you?
Yeah, assuming he's healthy and hopefully does get healthy quickly, I would like to see Casey Kane in there. I know he's raced in some dirt series and some other things. So it'd be cool to, see him check another box off his list, and I'm sure it would bring in some Casey Kane NASCAR fans into watching IndyCar, which then they'd go, wow, this is really fun to watch, and then we'd have new IndyCar fans. Allmendinger, I don't really know if he has a big NASCAR following, to be completely honest with you, but we've seen him before, and he did very well here, or I shouldn't say very well, but he was very impressive in his IndyCar. I think he came close to an Indy 500 win, if I'm not mistaken. I forget what year that was.
13.
Yeah, that was the year I know you tweeted before he had a loose belt in his car. So I don't know. I think Casey Kane would be cool to see since we've never seen him do open wheel before.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, AJ Allmendinger left Champ Car for NASCAR. I mean, fair play. He's trying to make more of a name of himself. That's fine. But when he was exiled after his suspension and Roger Penske picked him up to run a part-time schedule with his IndyCar team, and then he immediately bolts back to NASCAR after that, to me, that really rubbed me the wrong way. As far as Casey King goes, I really hope he gets the help to kind of figure out what's wrong with him. I think it's safe to say that he's not suffering from pneumonia ultrascopic cephalic conoconiosis, which I think is a relief for everybody. Is that fair in saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
thank you. But I would really like to see Casey King give it a try at Indy, especially since a lot of people don't know that he has a dirt beginning, which I know makes Jess happy.
Yes, it does.
He was really good at those dirt ovals, and then obviously got into NASCAR, and then he was more remembered as the pretty boy that raced for Dodge rather than the fact that he was a talented driver. But I guess adding both of those drivers or one of those drivers definitely brings that kind of positive attention you like at Indy. So fingers crossed. We'll segue into our second fan question of the night. It's from Will, who's at Will242434 on social media. And we'll start with Jess on this one. It's something that we actually didn't touch on our award show. We talked about most disappointing. We talked about most improved. We never asked who was the biggest sleeper of 2018. And that was just a driver who had a really good year that nobody gave them a lot of credit for. So they kind of just slid under the radar most of the year. Was there anybody, to your recollection, Jess, that didn't get enough credit for what they did last season?
That's tough. Oh, why do you throw me under the bus like this?
Yes,
because Mike always does it to me. So,
this is maybe gonna sound bad, but before the Pocono accident, I think that Robert did not get the credit he deserved. I think that kind of made people take another look at him, because then it was like, oh yeah, we had a really good driver here who's doing some pretty dang amazing things, and now we don't. So I think that up to that point, I would have to say Robert. But overall, for the whole season, man, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
That's a good answer. There's nothing wrong with that. Mike, what do you got?
This is a really tough one. I'm going to go with Simon Pagenaud kind of rebounding in the last quarter of the season. Most people just talk about the fact, and he talks about the fact, you know, not winning a race in an entire season at Penske is unacceptable and not good. But he still finished the championship sixth and finished in the top 10 every race the second half of the year. So he definitely rebounded after a tough start to the year. So I'll go with Pagenaud, because I don't think he's really been talked about that much this offseason, at least so far.
He did recover well. Just so anybody knows at home, Wickens ended the season with a 7.3 rating, which is the highest of any rookie since 2008, which is phenomenal. You just never see that from rookies. It's just incredible. I mean, off the top of my head, he's got to be at least top three rookies ever since at least the CART era started, between Nigel Mansell in 93 and Montoya in 99. And then Pagenaud definitely as well. He did recover well. In his final nine races, he averaged a 7.4 rating, which is definitely very impressive. Nothing to turn your nose up at. I'm going to go outside the box, though, with my answer. And I'm going to say that bad man, Santino Ferrucci. You know, he had the mechanical failure at Portland that really ruined a top 10 performance. At Sonoma, again, it's only his fourth race in IndyCar, and he finished 11th, which to me is definitely a very impressive result, especially since, you know, Coyne's not necessarily the worst team on the grid, but they're nowhere close to being the best team on the grid either. And then at Detroit, he got into a collision with Kimball, and by collision, I mean Charlie Kimball ran over him in the first race, and then he got into an early lap incident on the second race with Piggott. So both of those races were kind of moot. But overall, I think we saw a lot of promise from Ferrucci. And I think that if he can just get some more time in the seat and maybe find a way to get a better ride, I think we can see a lot out of him. So We do appreciate that fan question, Will. We'll turn it back over to Mike here real quick.
Yes, thankfully, our last Patreon shout-out is our buddy George, who says he is the official Pit Lane Parlay advisor on spirits distilled in Scotland or somewhere near there, because he is a fan of scotch. So thank you, George. Give us your opinions, because I don't really drink that often, but I'm always open to new beverages.
Yes, we actually got into a conversation with this on Twitter. So thanks, Butts' Nuts 4. I did just pick up a bottle of crap. I can't remember the name of it. I think it's called Glenlivet. And then the next one I'm going to try is Glenfiddich. But George, I'm always open to scotch suggestions. I love scotch. Or if anybody out there has any suggestions for us, I mean, you do not have to persuade us too hard to try an alcohol. I'll tell you that. I think us three, I don't know. I don't even know. What does dodecahedron even mean? Is that a descriptive word, or is connoisseur just the word we're going to stick with tonight?
I don't know. Did you ever figure out what that means?
I just looked it up to make sure it wasn't a meme or some stupid, you know, inside joke that I was missing or something.
In geometry.
Probably some shape of some kind.
It's any polyhedron with 12 flat surfaces.
Well, hang on. Are you cheating right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Man, I didn't even pick up on that, honestly. I was like, wow, she's really smart.
Yeah, because when she said, when she started reading a word for word definition, it kind of gave it away. but yes, so we're all three very connoisseurs, or 12 shaped flat images of alcohol. So if you have any suggestions for us, just message us on Twitter, and we'll definitely give it a shot here.
I think after enough alcohol, we would end up being dodecahedrons.
Yes.
Why is that catching on tonight? I don't know. If you ever see that tweet on Twitter, I'm not going to do it every week, but if you ever see a tweet there saying that I'll say any word, this is what I'm talking about. So just feel free to send it to me. We'll try our best here. One final topic before we get to the pitfalls is a rather interesting article that James Hinchcliffe came out with today on Racer. And he was imploring the idea of a driver's union. And I know this topic has been tossed around a couple times. I think it was after Vegas that a driver was selected at each race to kind of work with the stewards in IndyCar to make sure that everything was up to spec. Because I think in the first race after at St. Pete, Justin Wilson, I think was like the ambassador for that race or something along that lines, just so that the drivers had like a direct voice to make sure that they were being heard. I don't think that ever led to anything, though. I don't think it stuck. And so now what James Hinchcliffe is arguing is that they just want basically a driver's association or a driver's union or something along those lines to represent the drivers and just to make sure that their voices are being heard or that they're involved with the decision making. And then on top of that, he was talking about sometimes, you know, it's kind of a rough business being a driver as far as job security. So we can start a quick debate here, and we'll start with Mike as far as if you think this is a good idea or if you think this is something that's going to catch on. What do you think?
Oh, man. It's a great read, and I think I would like to get some sort of legal expert on to understand how, a players association type thing works. But I get where it's coming from. I can't debate it at all. The only part that I maybe don't agree with is the job security. You know, if an NFL quarterback gets released, you know, he's out of a job too.
Steal my argument.
Sorry.
I said word for word for that on Twitter.
That's probably where I read it, because I know I read that somewhere. I still remember where it's from. But the other point, I mean, he brings up good points, and I certainly understand where he's coming from, how it would work. I have no idea. I'm definitely not an expert there, but in terms of, you know, having their voices, you know, be heard, if you have, you know, a leader of the, let's just say, called Drivers Association, I don't think is a bad thing at all. So I'm all for it in that aspect. And, you know, maybe in terms of, you know, providing some sort of health insurance type thing. Yeah, sure. In terms of job security, that's the only part I might debate.
Okay. So I didn't get to read the article earlier. I'm kind of reading through it now. I had seen a couple things that struck me as odd just in the headlines or whatever. So I'm reading it now, but there's one particular sentence in this that really rubs me the wrong way. And I love James, so please don't take it as me bashing him, but he said, you shouldn't have to risk your life for free. So for me, I feel like he is coming at it from a money perspective. And I feel like it should be more from a having the drivers have their voices heard on things at the track. So I think there's kind of a fine line there. I think that, yes, the drivers obviously should have say, you know, this corner is not safe if it's wet or whatever. You know, things like that. Yes. I don't know that I want a driver's union to be a union and go in fighting for money, because then what we start seeing is strikes and things like that. And nobody wants that. You know, it's just, I think that there's a fine line there. I think there should be some kind of representation where their voices on things, safety wise and whatnot, do come into play. But I don't feel like they should be negotiating for their wages. That's what they have agents for. So I feel like, you know, their agents should be doing that part of the job and not a union per se.
Yeah, and he does argue that in his article too, is that not everybody can afford an agent. But when you get to a level like James Hinchcliffe or, you know, some of the upper tier but not legendary drivers, because obviously Scott Dixon's well represented, but like a James Hinchcliffe or a Takuma Sato or a Graham Rahal, those kind of drivers, like, they can afford an agent. Now, I can see that argument maybe for like a Pietro Fittipaldi or a Zachary Clayman DeMello or someone like that who maybe can't afford an agent just because they're new to the sport and don't have an established foot in the sport yet. But you guys both make, you know, excellent points. I think IndyCar teams have a hard enough time staying out of the red financially that now would not be the time to kind of ask for a higher wage. And then to touch on Mike's point, you know, if a driver gets fired, there could be a host of reasons for it. If your guy's going out there and wrecking every race, there shouldn't be a union behind him saying that, oh no, you can't fire him, because if he's up there tearing up equipment and, you know, last in the championship, I think you have every right to fire him. And, you know, like Mike said, which was my point on social media, if you're Jay Cutler who goes out there and throws 4 interceptions a game, you know, you ought to be fired. And the NFL Players Association is not going to come in and say, oh, hang on, Chicago, you can't fire Jay Cutler because he's bad. Like, that's not how it works. They're just there to make sure that teams don't commit malice against a player and make sure that, you know, if a guy gets pulled over and put in jail and then it turns out to be guilty, that a team can't fire him for that or things like that. I think that's how the NFLPA works. They're basically there to make sure that players are well represented and have a voice, but they're not there. So a driver's association or something like that, where, you know, I vividly remember before Las Vegas in 2011, Will Power was like, you know, this is not okay. Like, this is not going to work. I don't feel safe. You know, let's get together and discuss this before we go out there and race. I think like something like that's an excellent idea. Or if they get to a Portland and they don't like the way a curb is because it could launch them. I'm not saying that happened at Portland, but if it did happen, you know, they could get together and say, you know, like, this isn't going to work. Like, I don't know why anybody would be against that. They wouldn't be running the show. They would just be having their opinion. But when we start talking about money and we start talking about, you can't fire this driver because they're bad, I don't know if that's what he's alluding to, but that to me is not okay.
Yeah. Fair point there.
So I think with that, do we have any other sponsors to give a shout out to? I know we gave one to Toronto Motorsport. We do appreciate.
Special thanks to, you know, at @EliteRacing_ on Twitter, the Sim Racing League. They have leagues in iRacing and, you know, the NASCAR video games and Project Cars and I think a couple other games that I can't think of off the top of my head here. for sponsoring again this week. And with that, I guess we can get into the pitfalls. Matt, you want to go first?
Sure. And we do appreciate everybody listening at home and listening on their way to work or at work or wherever you are. We really do appreciate it. Feel free to follow us on social media at Pit Lane Parlay. That's P-A-R-L-E-Y. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done pitfalls. I'm a little rusty at this. But after the showing they gave at Sonoma, I think Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan Racing deserve a pitfall this week. Just because Takuma Sato retired with an engine failure and then Graham Rahal had his race ruined by an electrical failure. And if there's two races in the year, you don't want to have that happen. It'd be the double points races. So obviously it really deflated the seasons for Rahal and Sato on the championship point standings, just because they did have a better year than what their final points tally shows. So it was really kind of a bummer for both drivers to retire with something out of their control. So I think, and I know, you know, engine failure may not come down to Rahal's team, but it's just still kind of a punch to the gut after what was a above average season for the team. So that'll be my pitfall for the week.
I'll step in here. I'm going to pitfall on NASCAR for what sounds like they're going to go with the all-star race aero package for every race next year, which is, you know, what I watched about 5 minutes of it and ended up falling asleep. And NASCAR fans alike seem to hate the decision. So if NASCAR fans really don't like it, I can't imagine any of us would approve of the decision. Even the guys, there's a NASCAR podcast, PETM podcast, is their Twitter handle, who is not pleased with the decision. So I feel like if another podcast out there talking about NASCAR is not a fan of a NASCAR decision, it's definitely not going to help NASCAR's failing ratings this year.
Sounds like they need a Jay Fry. And yeah. Yes, and it doesn't, I mean, how can NASCAR get worse? So I'm really looking forward to seeing this. And then we'll go to Jess.
Okay, so mine's kind of silly, and we'll have to tweet out and put on Facebook a picture of this, because you have to see it to appreciate it. It was last night, right? The Born Racer premiere?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was last night or the night before. But anyways, last night at the Born Racer premiere, it appears that maybe Maker's Mark was a sponsor or whatnot. Anyways, they had cups there, and in the cups for the beverages that everybody was having, there were straws. And my pitfall is the straws that were in the cups, because they had Scott's face on them, and God love him. Like, I like Scott, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to drink my drink out of a Scott Dixon straw. It's just kind of creepy. And so the picture that I saw of this was actually Scott and Emma drinking out of these cups. So Scott drinking out of himself is even creepier. So as silly sounds as terrible. It is, the straws get my pitfall.
Well, it sounds like whoever designed that was a dodecahedron. Is that right? Does that sound about fair?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's a good way to put it. And with that, I think we are good to close off the episode, Jess.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcastly Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.